He coughed. Maybe we should, He gestured with one grey hand towards the inner chamber of the tent. We stepped through, into the part of the tent where Dominica performed her operations. Dominica was floating on her back, half a metre above her surgical couch, suspended in that position by the steam-powered articulated boom suspended harness which encased her lower half. The harness's pneumatics were still hissing, gentle fingers of vapour rising towards the ceiling. Top heavy, she had canted back to an angle where her hips floated higher than her shoulders. The head of someone thinner than Dominica would probably have lolled to one side, but the rolls of fat around her neck kept her face pointed at the ceiling, and her eyes were wide open, glazed white, her jaw hanging slackly open. Snakes covered her body. The largest of them were dead, draped across her girth like patterned scarves, their inanimate bodies reaching to the bed. There was no doubting that they were dead. They'd been slit along the belly with a knife, and their blood had painted ribbons on the couch. Smaller snakes were still alive, coiled across her belly or the couch, although they hardly moved, even when I approached them, which I did with exquisite caution. I thought of the snake sellers I had seen in the mulch. That was where these animals had come from, purchased solely to provide detail to this tableau. "I told you you wouldn't like it," Pransky said, his voice cutting through the stunned silence of our party. "I've seen some sick things in my time, believe me, but this must be—" "There's a method to it," I said softly. "It's not as sick as it seems." "You must be insane!" Pransky had said it, but I had no doubt that the sentiment was felt by the others present. It was hard to blame them for that, but I knew what I was saying was right. "What do you mean?" Zebra asked. "A method?" "It's meant as a message," I said, moving around the levitating corpse so that I could get a better look at her face. "A kind of calling card. A message to me, actually." I touched Dominica's face, the slight pressure of my hand making her head turn to one side, so that the others could see the neat wound bored into the middle of her forehead. "Because," I said, voicing what I knew to be the truth for the first time, "Tana Mirabel did it." Somewhere near my 60th birthday, though I had long since ceased to mark the passage of time, what was the point when you were immortal, and had doctored ship's records to obscure the details of my own past, I knew that the time had come to make my move. The choice of time was not really mine, forced upon me by the mechanics of our crossing, but I could still let the moment pass if I wished, forgetting about the plans which had occupied my mind so thoroughly for half my life. My preparations had been meticulous, and had I chosen to abandon them, my plans would never have come to light. For a moment I allowed myself the bittersweet pleasure of balancing vastly opposed futures, one in which I was triumphant, one in which I submitted meekly to the greater good of the flotilla, even if that meant hardship for my own people, and for the tiniest of moments I hesitated. "On my mark," said old man Armesto of the Brasilia. "Deceleration, burn, ignition in 20 seconds. "Agreed," I said, from the vantage point of my command seat, poised high in the bridge. Two other voices echoed me with tiny time lags, the captains of the Baghdad and the Palestine. Journey's End lay close ahead, its star the brighter of the 61 Cygni pair, a bloodshot lantern in the night. Against all the odds, against all the predictions, the flotilla had crossed interstellar space successfully. The fact that one ship had been destroyed did not taint the victory in the slightest degree.